Dan Lamb, thanks so much for having me to your studio.
Thank you for being here.
I haven't had a chance to talk to you really since last year about your artwork, mm-hmm. and you've been having really like a hell of a year. Mm-hmm. You've been able to be in Juxpo's 200th anniversary issue. You're having a solo show in San Francisco, and there are so many other things. You had a show in New York City and everything like that. So I kind of want to just catch people up on who you are and what you do. Would you mind telling us a little bit about your blob art that we've probably seen on Instagram?
Yeah, so I've been making these sculptures for about, it's been less than 2 years. My first drip sculpture really came about January of last year, so it hasn't been that long, but I make a variety of things. I make the, like, these shelf, you know, drips. I make wall sculptures. I'm starting to make, like, more floor pieces. The work has grown. I've started, not started to, but continue to experiment with more materials. I'm playing now with like things that are more interactive and sort of shifting where my focus is, like within the work itself. Having shown so much and having the work out there and exposed so much to people, I really am interested in how people respond to them, in the sense of, like, you know, they're always like, oh, I want to touch them. What do they feel like? You know, is it soft? Is it hard? And I really am interested in that sort of dialogue with the audience. So there's kind of been what's guiding my newer work, with the more interactive pieces that I've been doing. But yeah, it's been really crazy and fun, and the pieces have continued to grow, and again, like, more materials and different processes. And
yeah. I should remind people who maybe haven't heard of Dan Lamb that these are like these like amorphous blob like like pieces, and they're sculptures, which you also paint and do a bunch of things to, but sometimes they look like maybe dripping off the wall, like dripping, I don't even know what you would call it, but something that's been dripping off the wall, or they could look like these round circular pieces, almost cellular or molecular looking.
Yeah.
Why don't I have you maybe tell us a little bit about maybe some of the first ones you started to make, and sort of how you would describe them.
Well, they're very, very organic is the kind of the look of them. They're very organic. I'm very much inspired by nature and how things have formed, like, in nature. Not a super direct influence, but that's kind of how I form, like, my pieces. But yeah, the first things I've made with this material, I use polyurethane foam, which is a expanding foam. It's used a lot in mold making and casting. There are also different forms of it used in, like, insulation, more like, you know, home improvement type of stuff. But when I first started working with the material, I was really interested in how I could manipulate the material. So it's a closed cell material, so it doesn't absorb anything. It's really light. It kind of reminds me of the body or fat, or, like, you know, just like meat almost, in its look. So I just started to kind of play around with it and manipulate the material and just learn more about, like, how it moves, how it works. You know, there's like certain things that factor into it when I work with it, like temperature is a thing, humidity is a thing, you know, the time of year, because of the temperatures affects curing and all that stuff. But yeah, they're very organic, but very made from very synthetic materials.
And we've talked about it a little bit, but you've been very open about, like, kind of showing the creation process, right? Like, you've had videos from Artsy, and I'm guessing so many other places and wanted to kind of show you making these works. Can you talk a little bit about how, like, social media and video has kind of aided you in showing off your work? Because, I mean, you're in Dallas, but you got thousands of followers around the world. I mean, when we first met, like, Miley Cyrus had just, like, bought one of your pieces and was a fan. And that was, like, of course, you know, internet fodder.
Yeah. You know, I think that for me, I'm very much interested in material. So I think that it's fun for me to share my process with people. And a lot of times, because of what I work with and how I work, my process just looks very different from a lot of other people's processes. Especially if you're a painter, you could do like a time-lapse video of you painting something, which is super interesting and cool. But, like, you know, if I'm working with like a silicone or a polyurethane foam, that's not something that everyone works with or is as common as paint. So in order, like, to be able to show that to people, I think is really cool, and to see the response. And it does help, like, to have the audience that I do and to be able to share these little, like, bits and pieces of my process. Sometimes it answers questions, and a lot of times it poses more questions. Like, you know, I'll do something where like I do a resin pour. I use resin in my works too. And I'll like pour some resin. I'll do a video of like a resin pour and people are like, what is it? Like, I don't get what's going on because the form is already so abstract. But then, you know, the people who do work with those materials are like, oh, she's pouring resin on top of one of her sculptures. So yeah, it's kind of interesting, I guess, the feedback from like this large audience of people.
I may be wrong, but I feel like that's something that like a lot of artists maybe don't always invite into their practice, you know. I know for myself, like if someone was like, Hottie, let me stand behind you as you work in the audio story, I might be like, could you not?
Yeah.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
But you've, like I said, you've been very open to that, and it sounds as though the reception has been well received by at least consumers of art, you know.
Yeah.
Have you felt like doing that and being open to in that process has inspired folks to do anything like you, or are there people like you doing work that looks like this? I mean, it's just so unique.
Yeah. I mean, I've had quite a few like students, especially, you know, like tag me on Instagram photos where they're like, oh, I've made a Dan Lamb inspired drip. They'll make it out of like wood and, you know, they'll tag me, or like they'll do ceramics. Or I have had, you know, other people like tag me in photos where they're like, oh, I tried out polyurethane foam. So I think it has, sharing bits and pieces of my process helps people in terms of like expanding their minds as to what materials they could use. So polyurethane foam is not a super common material. And so, yeah, people are like becoming more experimental if that's the case. Like if they see my work and they're like, oh, I really want to make one, that they're driven enough to go and buy some polyurethane foam and like, you know, make something.
Even if it's not necessarily their practice.
Right, exactly, yeah. And I'm very into materials and like process. So, you know, to experiment and explore, I think is a part of the whole like creative process. Is, you know, when you do something that you're not comfortable with, it like, it's just this very fertile ground for more things to come from it. You know, I think that it's a great starting point for a lot of people too, if they're not used to working with these kinds of things. If they see my work and they're like, oh yeah, like I want to make one, cool. Like, you know, especially if it's like a student or someone who's like in school and learning, like it just helps them kind of have a bigger toolbox of things that they could work from.
Well, you know, speaking of school, you mentioned that this isn't just something you decided to do one day, you know,
yeah.
that this was, there was a process to this, and you showed me a piece that was done almost a decade ago.
Yeah.
And I can see the beginnings of the drip, you know, there.
Yeah.
And I'm curious if you want to talk a little bit where that like love for the softness mm-hmm. sort of came from.
There were a few like kind of key catalyst moments, I think, in like during my schooling and academic career, where like when I was an undergrad, you know, I was doing painting and drawing, and I had this kind of moment. I think we had learned about maybe the Impressionists, and they were like, you know, we talked about how the Impressionists were not embraced by their peers, by the academy, because they were seen as like not talented and they didn't know how to paint. And really the beauty of the Impressionists is that they were freeing paint, the paint material from its like history, essentially. Like paint has always been used as a means of creating illusion, right? Like how real can we make something look from paint? So the Impressionists were like, well, no, like we want the looseness of that paint. We want it to be painterly. We want to capture like the essence of it. And I thought that was just this really beautiful kind of thing. Like paint could exist with its own life. So that was like a, you know, like a moment. And so like I went home, went to my studio, and I was working on some stuff, and I had this kind of thing where I was like, well, why do we consider painting? Like, what happens when I leave the surface? What happens when I leave the paint surface? And that kind of began this long, you know, like it has been like a decade, this journey of kind of pushing texture and material and creating things that maybe don't fit into a category. So yeah, that's where it started. Was I was painting and I wanted to build up texture, built up more and more texture, and that got too heavy. And then I was like, well, what else? What gives me this look of soft or drippy? And that I don't really have like an explanation for. I think that that's just what I've always been drawn to. But yeah, it kind of like started there. I was using hot glue, used plaster, resin, you know, just kept pushing material and continued to look for and find that like the perfect drippy soft material. And in grad school, I looked at Linda Binglis's work, and she had this series of works that she did where she poured polyurethane foam onto like a site, and it just had like this really, it just had such a great look. And I was inspired, so I found some, and then I just started playing with it, and it like has continued to grow from there.
Well, you know, when you kind of invent your own sort of half paint, half sculpture pieces, I mean, I imagine that you have to do a lot more inventing to get it to where you eventually want, right? Yeah. Like, you probably have to sit down and just truly think about what will come next, mm-hmm. you know? Can you talk a little bit about some of the things you've had to adapt or change or maybe purely invent so that you could make this work evolve?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think the really fun part, I was just thinking about this the other day, like sculpture, working with sculpture or working in the 3D presents like this whole set of problems, and the problem solving is kind of my favorite thing. Like I love like having a problem and then like figuring out how do I resolve this issue. So yeah, I think that with my pieces, I definitely have to, there have been a lot of like troubleshooting and kind of like finessing along the way. So like my drips, you know, the polyurethane foam, I know it doesn't stick to plastic, so that has provided me with like, you know, some solutions as far as like when I pour my drips, I have everything covered in plastic. The plastic helps the drips from move a certain way. I've upgraded to silicone to kind of work with some of my materials, and even within the silicone, like there's things that I have to make myself. Like you saw in my studio, I had like a really thick silicone mat that I use to pour some of my forms on top of, because there's nothing out there that resembles the thickness of that silicone that could allow for my pieces to be the way that I want them to be. Mm. Yeah, and there's other things, like I've had to build my own pedestals to make my pieces on. I used to use cardboard, which I found out over time will start to warp from the heat, which then makes my pieces not level or flush with the shelf or the wall. So like little fixes here and there have, just through trial and error, have kind of aided like my process in becoming much smoother. And there's still things that I haven't fully figured out yet, which is fun. But like, for example, making really, really large pieces, like I don't know exactly how to do that yet. I've made my biggest one is like a little over 5 feet, which you saw. And that's my most successful, largest one so far. But when things are scaled up like that, there are things that change. Like the foam changes, the amount of distance the foam has to like drip changes, you know. So there's all these little factors that kind of come into play that stir the pot for me, that I like have to then figure out how do I resolve these issues now. So I've been comfortable at like a certain scale, and so like that's why I also like to push scale smaller or bigger. I've become very efficient with a certain size, and so that's why now I'm expanding out and just getting larger. And yeah,
I've noticed, and I'm sure people who have seen your work have noticed, that there's been a change in texture, there's mm-hmm. a change in shapes, a change in, you know, there are little changes mm-hmm. in almost every sort of cycle that you go through, you know. And one of the things we often ask artists is like, are you creatively satisfied, you know? And I'm really curious, you know, you're having a moment, you know what I mean? And I'm sure there's like tons of satisfaction in that, like, you know, juxtapose a magazine. You've told me you've read your whole life. Like there's several pages in their magazine dedicated to you, you know? People are asking you to show your work nationally, mm-hmm. but creatively as someone who is trying to do something new and probably trying to push yourself, you know, professionally, is there still that satisfaction in what you're doing right now?
I mean, I am career satisfied. Things are very, very good right now, and I'm super happy with all the success in the studio. I think that like I'm happy with, you know, the streamlined aspects of my process that I've been able to kind of like figure out. But I think that there's always like a level of discomfort that comes from sort of the unknown. So like I get the question, like what's next, you know? And for me, I don't like sit down and strive to think like, how can I make something super different or super unique? But it is just building off of all the things I've already been thinking about and just continuing to grow. So my work is very like, it evolves out of itself. So I think I am happy with where I am, but I think that I should always also be a little bit dissatisfied in order for innovation to continue. Mm-hmm. I think it's important to challenge yourself and be out of your comfort zone. And so in that way, I guess I'm happy because I still am at that point. But I don't know. I think I'm always trying to push still. So maybe not. Maybe it's like, maybe you're never like happiness kind of like it's never like fully there because there's always something. I don't know.
Well, you know, it's funny because like you say that and like I think a lot of people assume like artists are just all like sad or they're all like dissatisfied with things mm-hmm. constantly, right? Which is a little bit unreal. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Some sure, but not yeah. everyone, you know. I wonder if when it comes to creating and challenging yourself, are there like challenges you kind of have to get over to make yourself want to do something new, or is that just something that comes every day? Because, you know, you think about a writer, right? Like a mm-hmm. writer maybe has to like, you know, suck up the courage to be like, all right, I'm going to write something I probably won't like, but I got to yeah. get it done today.
Yeah.
I wonder if you deal with that as an artist.
Well, like making something I don't like.
Yeah. Like, yeah, basically trying, right? Like yeah. trying every day, motivating yourself to do something new and to keep trying.
Yeah, that happens.
Yeah.
It does. Yeah. There are a lot of things that like happen in the studio that people don't see. So like while I do have this large Instagram following and I am able to like share a lot with people, there are a ton of things that like just happen that don't make it to the Instagram, that don't make it to like anyone's eyes but mine. Yeah, I think for me, if anything, pretty much the gauge for me is if anything ever gets boring, then it's like time to move on. Like if I'm not interested in my own work or the process of making it, so if I ever have a day where I'm like, oh, I don't want to work, like that doesn't happen. If that does happen, then I feel like there's something that's off that's like not calibrated right. So either like I just need some time off, you know, like to take a break, which can be hard, or there's something within the process that's not right, or, you know, so that's kind of like, it's a loose kind of thing for me, like to test, like I can kind of tell like something's off if I'm not feeling like working that day. But otherwise I usually go full force. Like I take a lot of risks, and I think that can be hard for some people. I really like the challenge. I like what all the random weird whatever things that could happen out of that risk.
Well, Dan, I appreciate you taking some time to chat with me and showing me around the studio a little bit. Thanks so much. And I wish you luck in your career.
Thank you.